Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, August 3rd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabweans stage a protest in Harare demanding that the country should abandon proposals to introduce bond notes.
Mangudya and Mugabe must resign because they failed to run the country.
Mandela Washington fellows meet with President Barack Obama in Washington, D.C. And the MDCT formalizes the disputed appointment of two-party vice presidents.
They have been given a legal mandate because it would have been impossible for them to work without a legal mandate.
For these stories and much more, please stay tuned. Thousands of Zimbabweans staged a peaceful march in Harare today to express their dismay over the proposed introduction of bond notes, President Robert Mugabe's failure to address the deteriorating economic situation in the country, and other issues affecting the nation. The protesters urged President Mugabe to step down, saying he has allegedly failed to run Zimbabwe. Reporter Patricia Mdadigwa was there and filed this report.
Police descended heavily on the protesters, who were waving some placards inscribed Mugabe must go and no to bond notes. Several protesters and journalists covering the event were injured when police attempted to disperse and arrest the marchers. The protesters were drawn from various organizations, including the opposition Transform Zimbabwe Party, led by Jacob Ngarivume, Tajamuka Sesijikile Campaign, and several others. The demonstration was cleared by the courts yesterday after police tried to block it. Despite the heavy riot police presence, the demonstrators sang anti-Mugabe songs during the march and openly urged President Mugabe to step down. Riot police failed to disperse the demonstrators at their gathering point in the Central Business District. The demonstrators marched to the government complex, which houses the Minister of Finance, and handed a petition to senior state officials before the police used force to disperse the crowd heading for parliament, where unemployed graduates wanted to leave a second petition on lack of jobs. Ngarivume, who took the police to court for refusing to sanction the demonstration, addressed the demonstrators at the Minister of Finance offices. He said Zimbabweans will not watch while a few individuals continue to take the country downhill.
Mangudya and Mugabe must resign because they failed to run the country. Let us continue the fight.
Ngarivume and a few other demonstrators were allowed to get inside the Minister of Finance that was heavily guarded to hand over the petition. Acting Permanent Secretary in the Minister of Finance and Economic Development, Zwine Chimwe Churu, received the petition and told the demonstrators that the minister, Patrick Chinamasa, would respond to their grievances.
We'll accept your petition and we'll hand it over to the Minister of Finance and Economic Development. And I believe that at an appropriate time, you respond to your petition.
A cross-border trader, Varai Dzochuma, told Studio 7 that she decided to join the demonstration to save her family from hunger.
We are saying no to bond notes. We want money that we can exchange to buy rands.
Michelle Mugoronji, a graduate and one of the hashtag This Gown campaign, equated the bond notes to tissue papers. Mugoronji said it was said that President Mugabe also failed to deal with corruption.
We do not want tissue paper. We're saying no to tissue paper. We're saying no to bond notes because it's just a way of them to steal more money. It's just a way to keep on robbing us.
Another demonstrator, Farai Murisa said the demonstration was designed to send a clear message to the government not to introduce bond notes. Murisa claimed that the introduction of the bond notes is illegal.
We have no any piece of legislation that actually allows what the Reserve Bank governor is trying to do.
One of the journalists, Chris Mahove, said police beat him up, though he indicated that he was not one of the demonstrators.
They just came from the turnoff to Parliament building. Then they started beating everybody who was there. I tried to show them my press card, but they couldn't hear any of it. They beat me up.
Reserve Bank Governor John Mangujgai has already said that the bond notes will be introduced in October. Most Zimbabweans are against the move, saying the government appears to be bringing back the local dollar through the back door. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
In a related development, a Harare magistrate today ordered the release on bail of four top war veterans accused of insulting or undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe granted vice chairperson of the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association, Headman Moyo, the organization's Secretary General Victor Matema Danda, the vice chairperson of Harare Province, Oyin Samuel Bila, and another Mashingo provincial leader, Francis Nando, who are being accused of undermining the authority of Mr. Mugabe, $300 bail each, and ordered them to report twice per week at various police stations. They were also ordered to return to court on the 5th of September for a routine remand. One of the defense attorneys, Beatrice Mutetwa, said at the next hearing she would raise several issues, including the police's move to deny her access to her clients during detention at various police stations. She added that she would also raise the issue of whether the acting prosecutor general has the right to prosecute accused persons in terms of the law, saying he was not properly sworn in.
Constitution says he must be appointed following the same procedures as a judge. We know that the acting person did not have such a procedure followed.
Mtetwa said two more former freedom fighters were arrested at the coast today. The state's crackdown on war veterans was necessitated by a communique released by the former combatants' body last month, calling on President Mugabe to address key issues affecting ordinary Zimbabweans and the welfare of the war veterans.
There were two others who were arrested today, Karen Kazingizi, who is also a war veteran, and Ephanos Zimunyi. He was also picked up from court today. I'm happy to say that both have been released without charge.
Political journalist and editor of the Observer newspaper, Barnabas Tondlana, said the continued onslaught on war veterans affects President Robert Mugabe's so-called legacy.
This is a very big blot on President Robert Mugabe's legacy, because these are the people who fought with him during the struggle for independence, and for him to suddenly turn around and look at them as enemies, their only crime being to lay bare what the problems of the country are. I think, you know, that really, to me, it shows that he has totally lost his senses.
Meanwhile, a ministerial committee set up by President Mugabe to investigate the issues surrounding the fallout with the war veterans is yet to present its findings. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Mandela Washington Fellows are meeting with United States President Barack Obama today in Washington, D.C. The more than 1,000 fellows drawn from the African continent include almost 60 Zimbabweans. We have our reporters Tatenda Gumbo and Tungamili Nkomo at the summit. They spoke to some of the fellows before the summit. Here is what Buthelezi Nyathi said about the presidential summit.
For me, the biggest takeaway will be this is the last-minute inspiration. We've been here for 6 weeks. We've met many phenomenal people, but today is the highlight to say, as we get ready to go back home, we are going away with Obama as the last impression on our minds. So as we get ready to work for the people back home, we will be deriving inspiration from the words of encouragement that we hope he will give us. So for me, really, it's all about expressing our gratitude and thanking him for the vision that is bringing us here, and we hope as we progress in the future, the great lessons from this fellowship will prove benefit to our communities back home.
That was Mandela Washington Fellow Buthelezi Nyathi. Tatenda also spoke with Mehluli Dube about the presidential summit.
Thanks, Joanna. So I'm here at the 2016 Mandela Wash Fellowship, and of course, it is the last day of the program with the presidential summit, and President Barack Obama is set to speak later on today. And of course, the program itself will be ending, and this will be President Obama's last address to the Mandela Washington Fellowship as a sitting president. So a lot of the fellows that are here, nearly 1,000, are very excited about having the opportunity to be in the same room with the president and to hear what he'll be saying.
How is it right now with the Zimbabweans there and their take right now with what's happening?
So yeah, we had a chance to some of the Zimbabweans, of course, as we know by now, there's 60 of them. And, you know, they're very excited about what Mr. Obama will be talking about. You know, many of them are coming from different sectors within Zimbabwe. So a lot of them have different feelings about things that they hope that Mr. Obama addresses that will specifically target the work that they do back in Zimbabwe. Of course, there's some of them who are saying we can't hide away from the issue of politics. And, you know, if given a chance to address Mr. Obama himself, they want to talk about the issue of governance, the issue of government, and, of course, the issue of politics in Zimbabwe. Some even today were saying, you know, as we sit here and we're going to be being addressed by President Obama back home, they are those who are protesting peacefully but having issues with the police. So they're saying that, you know, it's hard to not acknowledge what's going on back in Zimbabwe.
That was Studio 7 reporter Tatenda Gumbo on the line from the Mandela Washington Presidential Summit, which is happening right now, right here in Washington, D.C. The MDCT National Council has reportedly amended its constitution in order to accommodate three vice presidents. This was adopted at today's meeting at the party's headquarters in Harare, where both the National Executive and the National Council met. Party Secretary General Douglas Muonzora confirmed the changes to the constitution, saying that the National Council meeting was as good as a Congress. Muonzora tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri the National Council had two agenda items, namely the constitution and the appointment.
What was agreed is that we now have a constitution that is no longer questionable. That is the first one. And we now have a constitution that the National Council today sitting as Congress also agreed. The second one was that the president explained his appointments of the two vice presidents and the logic behind his appointments. And what that means is that the two gentlemen are going to sit as a vice president with specific special mandates that the president is going to allocate them. The most important thing to the MDC people who are there is that we did not want a situation where we will internally focus and lose the focus on the grand objective, which is to remove ZANU-PF and govern our people differently and change their lives. So we looked at what was most important to us was to make sure that the MDC moves forward and prepares for the 2018 election. The second thing that we also looked at were attempts by external forces to split the party, the MDC party. And we said we are not going to allow the party to be split at all.
Does this mean that you have amended the party constitution to accommodate the two vice presidents?
Well, that's what it basically means, yes. It means that they have been given a legal mandate because it would have been impossible for them to work without a legal mandate.
That was MDCT Secretary General Douglas Muonzora on the line from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. The appointment caused a lot of friction in the party, with indications that Vice President Thokozani Kope was not happy about the move. Sources say she's still unhappy even if the appointments have now been formalized through some of the party's top decision-making bodies outside Congress. The Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa says the country's fifth democratic municipal elections held today was smooth and peaceful despite a few hiccups. 204 parties contested the election, which over 26 million people were registered to vote. Zimbabweans living in South Africa have applauded South Africa for holding what they have described as a truly democratic election. Studio 7's Benedict Nhlapo reports from Johannesburg.
Voters from different political parties chatted and laughed as they stood in long winding queues that started forming as early as 7 o'clock in the morning in a bid to have a say in the country's governance through their vote. 29-year-old Xolelwa Besu, who voted at Hope Church in Auckland Park, Johannesburg, made it clear she wants the ruling African National Congress to remain in control of the country's municipalities.
I woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, so I am excited. I want to say tomorrow that is my leader because I put them there, not because the country put him there.
But others like Falcon Frederick, who voted at Mel Park Primary School in Johannesburg, was also clear that he wants the ANC out and the Democratic Alliance in control of the nation.
I'm very excited. I hope my vote counts. I want to see the ruling party out. I want everything to change.
And the country's Independent Electoral Commission, or IEC, says the fact that party supporters voted freely and could easily express themselves afterwards is an indication that the elections were free. Glenn Mashinini, chairperson of the IEC, says this is the way elections should be conducted in the country.
Many voting stations reported strong turnout from early in the day, with many voters already waiting to vote before 7 a.m., our opening time.
There were, however, a number of problems encountered. These included angry voters, preventing election officials from conducting elections in some places, some stations failing to open on time, ballot boxes arriving late, and some employers not allowing their employees to vote. Most Zimbabweans have commended South Africa for a peaceful election. One of them, Lizwe Mapena, had this advice to those Zimbabweans who have given up to vote.
This is the day to claim what you need. So if you sit down and then at the end you say, no, I can't do that because they can't hear, your voice is to vote.
And many say Zimbabwe should learn from South Africa so as to conduct free and fair elections in 2018. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedict Nhlapo.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, and we're broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies. And now we take a look at regional and international news. The Islamic State militant group says its West African affiliate, Nigeria-based Boko Haram, has a new leader. In its weekly magazine, Naba is published an interview with a man identified as Abu Musab al-Banawi from the group called its governor for West Africa. Boko Haram pledged allegiance to Islamic State last year. And the Olympic torch arrived by boat in Rio de Janeiro today as part of its 90-day relay around the country ahead of the Olympic Games beginning Friday. The government managed to pay teachers their July salaries yesterday as promised, but the state employees are facing problems of accessing money in commercial banks due to crippling shortages of cash in the country. Takaba Firajou of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says they have to go to banks several times to withdraw cash for domestic purposes. Zimbabwe has been facing serious cash shortages due to a subdued economy, collapsing companies, which are some of the major sources of revenue, and low production in other sectors. Civil servant salaries have of late been staggered as a result of lack of cash. Joe tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that the cash crisis is affecting all teachers and other Zimbabweans.
Yes, I can confirm that the salaries were put in the banks. But the unfortunate issue is that a considerable number of teachers who have traveled all the way from the rural areas are not able to access the money. The essence is that most of the banks do not have money, or if they have money, they are only giving $50. Some are giving $100. And worse still, teachers are made to queue outside in order to use Zimsi to access money. And you find that a lot of bank tellers are in the bank and they are not giving money. And they want everyone to queue outside on the ATM in order to get money. And you have queues up to 3 kilometers, winding queues of teachers. And it's said in an independent country 36 years after independence that teachers are made to queue as if they are beggars, and the majority of them will not be able even to access their money by virtue of the line, or in most cases, the money is not there.
What reasons are the banks giving for these shortages?
Well, the banks are stating that their allocation from RBZ is not always forthcoming, to an extent that they are depending on those who are depositing.
The Republican and Democratic Party political machines are hard at work following their conventions held recently. The two parties are now fighting to win public support for their candidates, Republican Donald Trump and Democratic Party Hillary Clinton, who have hit the campaign trail in preparation for the November presidential election. For perspective on the electoral process in the run-up to the poll, Studio 7's Chioneso Jani reached Professor Francis Musoni of the University of Kentucky.
On face value, you could say Hillary Clinton is, you know, better positioned to win this year's election. She has a lot to offer in terms of, you know, experience, in terms of the institutional backing that she has, in terms of the Democratic Party itself, in terms of other prominent figures in the party itself, and also, of course, in terms of the policies that she's actually putting on the table and how they are most likely going to be received by a lot of people in America. And of course, the fact that you have a lot of discontent, a lot of discord in the Republican Party. So when you look at it from that perspective, you would most likely predict that Hillary is going to win. However, I wouldn't quickly rule out the fact that Donald Trump has a chance. You know, we have witnessed from the primary elections, here's someone who literally did not have any political institution to rely on for his primary run, but he still made it. And, you know, you still cannot rule out the fact that he can still pull out a surprise this November. And if he does play his cards well and avoid a lot of gaffes that he has made so far, he's continuously making, I think he can still have a chance of winning the election.
Can you see any resemblance with what is happening in Zimbabwe in terms of the campaigning preparations towards the elections for 2018?
I mean, of course, most of the elections in Zimbabwe, yes, there are issues, but they're not, you know, clearly and entirely based on issues. There's a lot of, you know, manipulation of the electoral system that goes on with the elections in Zimbabwe, or at least over the past 10 to 15 years, we have seen that happening most of the times. Of course, you see that also, you know, you know, unfolding with the American, you know, DNC and other things. But in terms of the real issues, there is a general sense of mistrust that people have in the political institution. Here in the U.S., you see that, you know, people generally feel that the politicians and the political institutions are not quite addressing the issues, the bread and butter issues that affect you know, people on a daily basis. Again, the Zimbabwean scenario is a very, very difficult scenario. Right now, I would say that it's, I think, a lot happening, and we will most likely see a lot of things before 2018. And I don't know if I can say I'm hopeful that there's going to be positive outcome out of what is happening right now, except that I see ZANU-PF, you know, getting into serious trouble with the internal internal discord that is happening in ZANU-PF. How do you deal with ZANU-PF, which, of course, seems to be very much united, but you know, they win election, however you want to call it, either by rigging or whatever. But at the end of the day, they don't seem to be caring about the interest of the people. But they keep on winning, you know, the election based on maybe the control that they have on most of the institutions that, you know, have something to do with the elections, be it the electoral commission, be it also the military, you know, and what have you. So people have struggled to deal with that question. But now I think...
That was Francis Mosoni of the University of Kentucky speaking with Studio 7's Chioneso Jani. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our hosts will be talking with listeners about protests in Harare over the proposed introduction of bond notes and other issues affecting Zimbabweans. If you wish to join the show, call us at 001-202-619-2077. To recap today's top stories, Zimbabweans stage a protest in Harare demanding that the country should abandon proposals to introduce bond notes. Mandela Washington fellows to meet with President Barack Obama in Washington, D.C. And the MDCT formalizes the disputed appointments of two party vice presidents. That's our broadcast this evening. Join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com for more on our top stories. You can send us an email at studio7@voanews.com or text us at the following number: 001-202-465-0318. That's it for tonight, but please do stand by for Studio 7 News in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande in Washington, D.C.